Scotland's new superfruit. You know, it's huge for Scotland, and the Scottish government should be extremely proud of what we've created here. We import every day into the UK goji berries and acai berries, which come from the Amazon rainforest, when we can grow, you know, nutritional berries here on Scottish soil.
So welcome to our latest Hutton Highlights podcast. I'm Elaine Maslin, media officer here at the James Hutton Institute. Through our podcast, we bring you a glimpse into our world-leading research across food, energy, and environmental security. Today, we're talking food, a superfood that has the potential to diversify both Scotland's berry production sector and our diet. It has some fantastic properties and a great provenance. It's the honeyberry. With me to tell us all about it are Dr. Louise Gamble, Softfruit High Health Facility Manager here at the Hutton, Peter Arbuckle from Arbuckles, who grow and sell softfruit, and Caroline Black, who works for the Scottish Honeyberry Growers Association. So Peter, could you tell me a bit about what the honeyberries are, what type of fruit they are, for people who haven't had a chance to try them yet?
Yes, hello. Honeyberries are a new crop for Scotland. They are a member of the Lanicera family, or honeysuckle family of plants. They're well adapted to cold weather, which is an attribute to us here in Scotland. The plants can tolerate minus 20 themselves, and the flowers minus 7, which is very unusual for any fruiting plant.
They're not native to Scotland, so how did they end up here?
My son Stuart came across them on a visit to Japan on his honeymoon several years ago. He found them growing on some of the higher south-facing slopes in the colder region of Japan and was very impressed and could see their potential.
When was that, and did he bring them back? Tell us a bit more of the background to that.
Well, he observed them when he was out there and he could see the potential, and he studied them when he came home and found out a bit more about them.
Could you describe what they're like as well?
In Japan, they are called haskapu, which means, just literally means, a little present at the end of a branch, and they've long been cherished for their health-giving properties. They're like a blueberry in steroids, if you like. They're full of anthocyanins, antioxidants and vitamins, with a deep purple juice and a sweet tangy flavour, and they could be classed as the next superberry.
I love that, blueberry on steroids. What else is good about them?
They're very amenable to mechanical harvesting, which is a great attribute at this time of scarce and expensive labour. And commercially, they've been grown in Canada, Siberia and Poland to different degrees. So there was obviously potential here in Scotland, and Stuart, being Stuart, was keen to try them. That's led to us having a selection of different varieties on our own plantation here at Invergowrie. Leading on from that, a selection of growers have taken on the challenge, and we now have a Scottish honeyberry growers cooperative.
Fantastic. And I think Caroline can maybe tell us a bit more about the cooperative. So Caroline, how many people got involved and what have they planted? Can you tell me more about where this story that Stuart started has gone?
Yeah, so I think originally Stuart brought it back, and as Peter said, did quite a lot of research and trials with it back here in Scotland. And then I think there was probably a group of three or four of them who combined initially, went out to Canada, learned how they lay out the orchards in Canada commercially, and brought some of that back to Scotland. And since then, we now have a total of 8 growers growing for Scottish honeyberries with approximately 72 acres of orchards. So it's quite considerable, the biggest UK commercial honeyberry growing association in the UK. So we're very proud of that. There are members who have different varying sizes of orchards, some bigger, some smaller, but as a co-op, they all work and share together. So they share their growing techniques, their research and their experience, the varieties. They have, I think, about 15 different varieties they grow on the farms, and those varieties bring different attributes. Some of them are more sweet, have higher Brix, some of them are tartar, are really good for jam. So just depending on the variety, we then kind of match it up with the product.
And are these growers spread around all of Scotland or particular areas?
Yeah, so we cover a few counties. So we have got Tayside, Angus, Dundee, Fife, Perth, East Lothian, and the borders.
I understand there's only one soft fruit farmer in the cooperative, so a lot of come from different farming. So, see, Peter, you're the soft fruit background, but everyone else has come in from different backgrounds.
Definitely, Peter is the homegrown Scottish soft fruit expert within the group, so can guide us a lot with all his knowledge. He's got considerable knowledge of growing soft fruit in the area and has been growing honeyberries for the longest and has the largest orchard. So we learn a lot from Peter. He brings a huge amount to the group.
When it comes to being a soft fruit grower, it doesn't have a great advantage really in growing honeyberries because it's a different crop from and a different cultivation from what we're used to with other fruit that we grow. Because they're all grown outside, not in polytunnels and mechanically harvested, it's a totally different system. More amenable to arable farmers and fruit farmers.
Okay, that's really interesting. Do you think the arable industry are aware of that, that they could have that synergy with how they operate, or is that something that's an awareness that's being raised?
I think it's just a gradual process of becoming aware of that, and that it would fit into an arable rotation fairly well until we try it out and see what the prospects are. You know, it's just a slow burn at the moment.
Yeah, interesting. Lots of opportunities. So growing them, that's sort of one element to this, but I guess a big challenge as well is getting them to market. So this is a new product that people might not have heard about or understand or know what the product involves. And that's where we got involved here at the Hutton. So Louise, could you tell us a bit about what the Hutton's involvement in honeyberries has been and perhaps what the history of that was?
Hi, Elaine. So the Hutton's involvement really began with the former blackcurrant breeder, Dr. Dorot Jarrett, who was interested in novel crops and crop diversification really on farms. She was really interested in the possibility of honeyberry crop production as she is from Poland. And as Peter mentioned, that is one of the countries where honeyberry is grown. So as also Peter mentioned, his son Stuart brought them here whilst he was on his travels to Japan. So really together with the Arbuckles, she wanted to help bring a fifth berry to the market. And the KTP was launched.
And that's a knowledge transfer partnership for a...
Yep, so that's it. What it is, it's a partnership that really links businesses with knowledge bases and devises projects that are led by the KTP associate. So there was kind of a lot of different areas within this project, including understanding the agronomy of the crop. Marketing was one of the other major things. So really trying to get honeyberry out there. So over the 3 years, we attended a lot of different events, conferences, meetings to promote the growers and the berry, and also developing social media platforms. And there was obviously a strong element of scientific research, which really looked at analysing the nutritional content of these berries to establish honeyberry as a superfood.
So Peter has explained a bit about what sort of berry this is and how it's grown, but we also did some science delving into the real health benefits of them. Could you tell us a bit more about that and why should we be eating honeyberries?
Yeah, so there's a lot of research was conducted on these berries. We looked at a range of different compounds in honeyberries and compared these to other berries such as strawberries, raspberries, blueberries. We found that honeyberry contained extremely high levels of powerful antioxidants, and in many cases, significantly higher than these other berries that we mentioned. So this was really a large part of the KTP, was to use our scientific facilities and our knowledge to try and promote this berry and to show how nutritionally beneficial it is. We identified one particular compound called cyanidin-3-glucoside. And this particular compound has been shown in many different other research publications, having wide beneficial impacts on such things as the heart by lowering cholesterol, on the brain, positive impact on things like degenerative diseases, lowering blood glucose levels. The list kind of goes on. I've got a lot more other information on the effects of anti-inflammatory and gastroprotective and antimicrobial properties. And really with our research findings, and which we also published on, it's easy to see why this berry should be really termed as a superfruit.
So as Louise mentioned, there are quite a lot of peer-reviewed studies on honeyberries and specifically the anthracycline, the C3D anthracycline, that's a huge anti-inflammatory and has got very powerful properties. And Louise has already mentioned some of them, but one of the peer-reviewed studies actually trialed honeyberries on a running program. So they got 30 runners and did a peer-reviewed study. And at the end of the study, it found that if you ingested honey berries for a week prior to your race, you'd decrease your running time by 2% and also increase your time to tire. So to knock off 2% on a running time was pretty impressive. They actually put that down to the C3D anthocyanin, which a honeyberry has 85% of. And they reckon that that one anthocyanin, which helps with anti-inflammatory benefit, making your cells stress-free for longer, so you could go further, faster.
So were there any other results that could be beneficial beyond health? So kind of wider environmental benefits, for example, and Peter's already mentioned that sort of diversification with arable perhaps and intercropping. So was there anything else that was found in that, in those areas?
Yes. So we obviously, with the type of crop honeyberry is, it's grown in orchards. It's there for a very long time, so 25 years or more. So this really improves soil stability. And this in turn improves soil health and prevents soil erosion. The orchards also provide an early food source for our bee populations, which is really important. And obviously honeyberries really need pollinators. So the growers are really keen to improve and increase bee and insect pollination.
Climate resilience sort of was touched on by Peter. There's the temperatures that they can survive to, but also do they grow in a different season? So can they extend the fruit season as well? Is there anything around there?
Yes, they are the earliest fruiting crop, outdoor crop, of the whole of the fruit crops that we grow. They start to flower in early March, which is really early. Because they can tolerate the cold, they can survive the temperatures at that time. Hence the fruit end of June, beginning of July, which is a midsummer crop for us and the earliest outdoor fruiting crop that we have.
Does that help you in smoothing out your activities over the year as a soft fruit farmer?
Because it's a different program from the rest of our fruit, it doesn't really affect that, but it does give us a harvest period, which is generally a good weather window to get the crop harvested.
And in that early growing phase, obviously we're seeing climate changing and different weather patterns. I think the spring seems to be a bit more variable. Are they resilient to some of that variable weather patterns in that early part of this growing season?
They can suffer from cold, frosty winds early season. We have had some damage done with that in the past, so they're not entirely free of problems, but they recover from that very, very well. They're quite a resilient plant.
So while these fruit are quite new to Scotland, actually they've been grown elsewhere for quite some time and they've got quite established heritage elsewhere. Could you maybe give us a bit of that background on these fruit, Louise?
So when we first started this project, we obviously looked into the background, as you say, of honeyberries, where they originated from, and really what we found was they've been documented since mid-1700s with a large history of medicinal use. As mentioned, you know, they do have substantial health benefits. And this is probably why they were used back then. They were already recognised for this. But really, they've really grown in popularity since the 1950s. And as Peter mentioned, they're known across the world, many different names, and they're grown in many different regions. They did originate from colder regions such as Russia, and they've kind of spread across the Western continent. There's a lot of breeding programs in Canada. They're very popular over there. They're trying to improve the varieties or produce new varieties to provide a range of different products from honeyberries. And whilst doing the KTP, I attended some conferences, and there's actually been quite keen interest in slightly warmer climates as well. And there was one area in Europe, so in Italy, they were looking to start breeding. They had small populations of honeyberries growing there. So they are really becoming a lot more popular worldwide.
Just going on from what Louise mentioned there just now, Stuart, in the process of his survey for finding out more about these, came across a chap in Canada, in Nova Scotia, actually called Louis Cassels, who was very forthright in promoting honeyberries. They call them HASCAP out in Canada, and they're growing them for purposes, as we're saying, for health-giving properties. So he's trying to develop them and promote them out there, and he was quite helpful for Stuart to get information about the agronomy and the setting up of our orchard here at the Denver Gowrie.
And could you maybe tell us a bit more about that? What was involved in that original setup? How different was it on the ground to your soft fruit? You've mentioned it is different and maybe more land to arable. Could you, for a farmer interested in going down this route, what can they expect to get involved in?
It's it's a different agronomy practice from what we're used to with the soft fruit, and it's more akin to a blackcurrant plantation in that it's grown outdoor.
You refer to them as orchards, I understand, although they're maybe not like orchards that we might think of.
We call them orchards because that's what we think they are more akin to than anything else. They are great attracting wildlife. We see all sorts of wildlife in these orchards, from bats to deer to hares. Some of them we don't maybe want as much as we should do. Birds are attracted in their droves when it comes to harvesting, unfortunately, but they are great for attracting wildlife in. So they're great for the biodiversity.
Loads of little ladybugs and dragonflies, and it's incredible. Yeah, the colour array of insects you see in the orchard, it's beautiful.
In a summer evening, if you go up into the orchard and sit and look, there's a vast array of insects and wildlife in and around the orchard.
I think you should be selling well-being experiences to people to come and sit in these little paradises for half an hour on a summer evening and just soak up the wonderfulness. So,
yeah. We sometimes go for picnics out in the orchard. It's just a really lovely place to spend time.
Oh, no, fantastic. And hares. I love seeing hares. So, I'd enjoy seeing that. So what are your main honeyberry sales so far? We've spoken about the fruit, setting it up and what they're good for, but what are they being sold for? What are people buying and what's been popular and, you know, what's the public response been to these?
Mm-hmm. So, the co-op was set up in 2017. So they've been growing honeyberries for quite a while, but it takes quite a few years for the bushes to establish and mature enough to start producing fruit. So we've only really been selling fruit products for the last 3 years. Am I right, Peter?
Yeah.
Yeah, and I would say now we've really developed our products. We've got a beautiful jam that can be used, obviously, on hot buttered croissants or toast or crumpets, scones, but also mixed with yogurt, ice cream, spoon in your porridge in the morning. I actually add it to my gravy. So, you know, it's not a sweet, sweet jam. It's a beautiful soft set jam. We also freeze dry the berries. So we get the berries directly off the bush and we freeze dry them, which means we take the moisture level from 86% down to 4% or below. This then keeps it as an ambient product for up to 18 months, which is an incredible way then for us to move and sell honeyberries anywhere in the UK. It's a really tasty also way of eating them. You can use them for snacking, again, adding to your porridge, your granola, your breakfast, muesli or smoothies in the morning. The kids just snack on them. They also add them as toppings to their ice cream, add them into their porridge. I put them in salads. So lots of different ways of using the honeyberry, the freeze-dried honeyberries. We also have covered them in chocolate. So we've got beautiful dark chocolate, honeyberries, milk chocolate and white chocolate. And we're just actually going to do yogurt coated as well this year. So just a nice way of eating berries that can help us all in our kind of daily diet.
It sounds like there's a potential for a recipe book there and maybe a cocktail section at the end.
Yes, I know exactly. The colour is so incredible that mixed, you know, even if you put one or two of the freeze-dried berries into your gin and tonic or your glass of champagne or Prosecco, the colour just drains out of the berry and it falls, you know, falls down the glass. It can be used for lots of different things. Baking as well, it's fantastic in baking. My daughter makes marshmallows and meringues and the colour is so vivid.
And we're talking a lot about the freeze-dried berries and the jams, and Peter's mentioned that they're mechanically harvested. So it sounds like they need to be harvested at a similar period. So this is a good way to get them to market instead of having all of those fruit suddenly sitting somewhere.
Exactly. So the harvest period is quite short. It's only 2 weeks long. Am I right, Peter?
Yes. The different varieties spread that out a wee bit longer, but the nature of the berry itself, it has got a soft outer skin, so it doesn't sit for any great length of time as a fresh fruit. And the fact that we're having to harvest them all in a one, we've got a big volume of fruit, which we need to freeze right away to keep them. And hence, all the product that we have has to be derived from a frozen berry.
Is there a potential for fresh fruit at all? Is that something that could be developed in the future? I don't know if, Louise, you've looked at this.
So part of the project for KTP, we did some crossing experiments. So we do have a germplasm collection at the James Hutton Institute. And as Peter mentioned, for fresh fruit, honeyberries aren't on the market as a fresh fruit product as yet. And to go onto that fresh fruit market, there's obviously a few things that need to be considered and developed in terms of honeyberry varieties. So there's the visual aspect for consumers, there's the post-harvest or shelf life, as Peter mentioned.
And what are the main challenge or hurdles that you'd advise others who might be thinking about honeyberries as a crop?
That's a good question.
Yeah, it is a good question. The main hurdles. Actually, so I'd say the biggest thing, the biggest challenge that we have is educating the population on what a honeyberry is. So that is for sure the first and foremost question I get asked at any show is, I've never heard of a honeyberry. What's a honeyberry? So it's the education piece is huge. It's quite important to get across any way we can to as many people as possible what a honeyberry is and educate them on the health benefits of that. You know, obviously it shows you get sometimes 10 seconds with a customer, sometimes 30 seconds, sometimes 2 minutes. It depends. And you have to try and get the most amount of information across in that short piece of time, so that they can go away a bit more informed and can look back and look us up and go online and reorder any of the products. So that's the biggest thing. We've been on the Hairy Bikers regional TV program, which has helped hugely. That's really kind of launched us out into the UK population. And it's given a wealth of knowledge to people that haven't heard of honeyberries before. So people recognize us from that show. And then we're also using lots of different other PR means, social media, trying to get into articles, newspapers, and just try and get on the media platform as much as we can to educate people on what a honeyberry is and the benefits of a honeyberry.
Yeah, you need a TV chef or someone to, the Hairy Bikers, obviously, a good example of that.
Yeah. Chris Evans, actually, as well. We sent him down some because he actually had a Dr. Michael Geyer on one of his shows, and the doctor was advising if we could change 3 things in our diet, it would be to eat more beans, greens, and berries. So I sent him down some berries, and he started talking about our honey berries on Virgin Radio. So that was good.
Oh, fantastic. What about the retailers? Is it getting the mainstream retailers involved? Is that going to help?
Yes. So this is a process. We have to be able to prove, you know, our sales and our sales history to the retailers. So we're kind of in that process of being able to do that and open up to the retailers. We have meetings this year lined up with different retailers, so the kind of big 5, because what we'd really ideally like to do is get a frozen punnet in the frozen aisle. In the berry section, so they're more available to people to buy, to have at home in their freezers, to be able to add into smoothies and start using them more regularly. It's also more cost effective than freeze drying to have a punnet of frozen honeyberries in your freezer.
I can see that working. And maybe a honeyberry gin?
Yeah, not so healthy, but is a honeyberry gin being created already? There's lots of different collaborations, actually, that we work with. There's loads of new product development for quite a lot of larger companies that will be coming out in the next year or 2 years. And we all already collaborate with quite a lot of ice cream makers, gelato makers, gin producers, beer producers. There's quite a few people using it already as an ingredient in their products.
We have Caroline on board as our marketing strategist just now, and that's been great. She's doing a great job in promoting us. Before this year, we've been held back greatly with 3 years on the trot from Brexit and 2 years of COVID, that we've been trying to get stuff out there when nothing really has been happening. So that's held us back from where we needed to be up until now, but we're getting going now. And Caroline and our 2 other girls are doing a great job.
Okay, so let's give the last word to Caroline. What's your final remarks, Caroline?
Honeyberries are Scotland's new superfruit. You know, it's huge for Scotland, and the Scottish government should be extremely proud of what we've created here. We import every day into the UK goji berries and acai berries, which come from the Amazon rainforest, when we can grow, you know, nutritional berries here on Scottish soil.
I think that's a great point to end on. It sounds like there's a lot going on and we should expect to see honey berries popping up all over the place in the next year, coming years. It's really exciting to hear about. I've learned a lot and it's made me quite hungry. So I'm going to end it there and say thank you very much to our guests, Peter R. Buckle and Caroline Black, as well as Dr. Louise Gamble from the Hutton.
Thank you
also to you, the listeners, for joining us. We hope this episode gave you food for thought and maybe even a taste for trying Scotland's latest berry. I hope you do. You can find links to the cooperative and retailers in the show notes. Do like and share the podcast. And of course, subscribe to us on your podcast platform of choice. Just search Hutton Highlights Podcast. Until next time, stay safe.